Good morning, this is Jay Lutz. I'm here with William Walker and Robin Gagne, sorry. And this morning's interview is, we are at the Central Marietta Library, and we're here with David Wilkerson this morning. Thanks for coming in this morning on a Saturday and doing the interview with us. Let's get started with, let's talk a little bit about your background, where you were born and what your birthday was.
Okay. I was born in Fort Dix, New Jersey, the son of a Army sergeant and a stay-at-home mom. That was in 1969. I'm 40 years old, I guess approaching 41 as my kids remind me. Grew up my whole life in New Jersey. I ended up going to college in North Carolina, at North Carolina A&T, and then graduated in 91 with an accounting degree, then moved to Georgia right after that.
Okay. So, how did you decide on North Carolina?
A lot of people in my area went to North Carolina A&T or another historically black college, and I ended up going there. I was torn between accounting and engineering, and they had good programs in both. My brother was going to A&T, and so I ended up going down there as well.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Did you grow up on the base, or were you?
Outside the base, but we spent a lot of time on the base. Worked at the commissary growing up. I remembered going to the gym, and next to every gym was a church and a movie theater. So I remember those days growing up on the base. We lived off the base, but spending a lot of time on.
Sure. What was it like growing up the son of a military man?
I ended up being born in the tail end, so he didn't have to travel a lot. He had gotten out of Vietnam, and then after that, he was pretty much local. So, and then he ended up retiring at 75. It was nice going to the swimming pool and the movie theater to pay 75 cents while all my cousins off base were paying $3 or whatever. So it's unique. I guess it's very integrated on a military base. So I enjoyed that as a child.
Mm-hmm. What did he do in the Army?
Infantry.
Infantry?
Yes.
What rank did he make?
Sergeant Major. He ended up, finishing retiring with E-9, I would say.
And going by your bio, it looks like that his father was very influential on him. Do you remember any stories about your grandfather?
Not a lot, because he was older, and I just remember seeing him a lot, a really tall guy. But my dad did start a boys' club in his father's name, John Edison Wilkerson Boys Club, and started that in New Jersey after retiring from the military.
Okay. What town in New Jersey did he start?
Pemberton.
Pemberton?
Yes.
Okay. That's midway between Philadelphia and New York?
It's about 45 minutes from Philadelphia, and it's kind of a farmy town. I realize it now going back, not growing up I didn't realize it, but then again, picking blueberries and different things, I guess. Yes, it was a farm kind of town, so.
Uh-huh. How did you decide on accounting?
Good with numbers.
Yeah.
So it was either math or accounting, and seemed to be a lot more accounting jobs out there, and so I ended up pursuing accounting and then becoming a CPA.
Mm-hmm. Did you go right, after graduation, did you go right to Deloitte & Touche?
Finished up, graduated from A&T, and then went directly to Deloitte & Touche in Atlanta. So.
Your bio has Deloitte & Touche as top four.
At the time, it was a big six accounting firm, and now they're down to four accounting firms. So, yeah, it's one of the top four, I guess, largest accounting firms in the world. So I interviewed with all of them, and liking Deloitte.
I don't know much about accounting firms, but I know Deloitte and Touche and KPMG are pretty much the two.
Yeah.
Okay. And what role did you have there? Like, what type of accounts did you handle?
Auditor. Started off in auditing, manufacturing clients, got to go all over Georgia, banks, some credit unions, insurance industry. So it was a nice mix of clients, medium size. I didn't go to one large client and stay there all year, so it gave me a chance to see different industries in different parts of the state.
Sure. And what year did you start with them?
91.
So that's
from 91 to 94.
Okay. And that's when you moved to Cobb County?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. And when did you start getting involved in politics?
Like a lot of people, probably around the 92 presidential election, meaning that when I say a lot of people, presidential elections are what draw you out every 4 years, and then you kind of pop in, and then you get used to it, and then you come back a couple of years later, then you meet people. So 92 was probably the first time that I actively started getting involved, going to some of the Young Democrat meetings.
Mm-hmm. Did you do anything political while you were at college?
Just vote.
Yeah.
That was it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
It's interesting for a person that didn't study, didn't really care for history a lot or political science, I think. I think I even tried to get out of political science in college, but, just being where I am now and getting involved, I guess, is kind of a change.
Sure, sure. And What was your first step with getting into politics?
First step was probably going to some of the Young Democrat meetings, both in Fulton County and Cobb County, meeting a lot of the people that I still know today, and just volunteering on the campaign. You show up, need some help, and then you pass out flyers, you make some phone calls, and then you go home and, you know, do it again the next time.
Sure, sure. We spoke a little bit before about the gerrymandering case that you were part of. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved with that?
Yeah, I had been involved in, I guess, politics by that time, probably, 10 years, I guess, in various, you know, forms or fashions. And right after the 2000 census, you have to redraw the political boundaries. And at that time, there was 4 county commissioners in Cobb County. They were all Republican. There were no African Americans. And then there was the chairman. And when they redrew the lines, they basically realized that the southern part of the county, the Six Flags area, Central Cobb area, had changed significantly from the last census. Went from 20-something percent African American to over 30%. Which means that the electoral makeup would be different. So instead of just redrawing the lines and being done with it, they basically took the district from Six Flags all the way up to Acworth. And so seeing that, it, you know, there was a battle down in the legislature, they fought it, and then it had an end going to a court, and so then they started needing citizens to get involved. And so in any case, you have to have a plaintiff, and myself and 2 others joined in to try to stop it and just go with, you know, keeping districts together, you know.
Do you remember, was this case presented as a class action suit? Was it an individual?
It was just 3 individuals. It was Mark Bell, Tanya Lawrence, and myself.
Okay. And your attorney, do you remember his name?
Lee Parks.
Okay. Yeah. Does he specialize in voting rights, or?
Lee Parks he's one of the large, I guess, you know, well-known, I guess, voting rights attorneys in Georgia, I want to say. He does a lot of political stuff as well. So at the time, I want to say he was Mark Taylor's lawyer as well, for some different issues that he had, you know, anything that may come up.
And funding for the case came from?
Individuals in the community. I want to say the Cobb County Democratic Party did give, I want to say, $700 out of the $5,000 that we had to raise, or it might have been $500 out of the $5,000, but yeah, the majority was just raised straight out of the county, and, you know, churches, you know, people giving money.
I know from what I've looked at in the case of Grogan versus Hunter is that for a period of time, people didn't realize the gerrymandering had occurred because no one on paper had seen the map, the boundaries, the way. Was that the same case here? And then what was people's reaction when they actually saw the makeup of the wards?
You're right, because what typically happens is you go to vote on election day and then you vote for somebody, and the next time you go back and you see a same number, you just vote. You don't look at necessarily the map because you're not going to see it when you go to vote. In this case, we had to make everything visual. So what we did was put up the before and the after, and then just and that told a huge story all by itself. So we printed up, you know, thousands of flyers and handed them out. But once people saw the visual aspect of it, yeah, they were just shocked. Yeah. I mean, even the county commissioners, you know, couldn't explain it. You know, they were just, you know, saying we're playing politics. I mean, that's all it's about.
Sure.
And, you know, they were quoted saying that. So.
Sure. And when the lines were drawn after the census, and this was the,
2000 census.
2000 census. Mm-hmm. Okay. Was it submitted, Section 5, for preclearance?
Yes, and that's when we ended up getting involved, is during the preclearance stage. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for the preclearance, then, we wouldn't even had a chance because they would have just drawn the map. So, I'm a big fan of the preclearance only because I see that this impact, even in districts that you would say are not 50, you know, it doesn't have to be a majority-minority district, in my opinion. It just needs to be one where you have significant where you have influence. Mm-hmm. And significant influence, we have determined over the years, just looking at the numbers, is about 29%. And I think, you know, this case ended up proving that out.
Sure, sure. Do you remember the your attorney, they argued Section 5, they went the Section 5 route?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, they went the Section 5 route, and it was our attorney, and I think the commissioners had, I think, 4 or 5 attorneys on their side, and the judge ended up ruling in our attorney's favor.
Do you remember the argument that they were presenting?
The argument they presented was, it's political. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's just purely political. That was one, that there's nothing stopping anybody from doing Democrat versus Republican. If we're trying to keep a Republican in office, you know, that, you know, you can't, there's nothing wrong with that, which I think the courts have found that's true. They also argued that that there was no influence. You can't have influence unless you're at the 50%, which the judge didn't agree with, and I disagree with, and the attorney disagreed with. And so I think we're all on the same page, except for the other attorneys at the time, that significant influence doesn't start at 50%.
Sure, absolutely. What was your reaction when the decision came down?
Yeah, you know, looking back on it, almost a year after the process starts, you're happy. I mean, you're excited. You're glad that it's over. You're glad that the process worked the way it's supposed to. You're glad. I was glad that the commissioners decided to stop when they did, because after the first ruling, the legislature, I think, would have kept going. I mean, Earl Earhart, who sponsored the map, is the same one that tried to get rid of affirmative action in all of Georgia. So that just, kind of gives you an indication. So I am glad that, we had a good attorney. I'm glad that the commissioners backed off.
Sure.
And, it was also good that one of the commissioners had made the comment that, when we went, there was a room full of church members, and we, waited for a couple hours because there was other things going on before we had a chance to speak. And he said, I have no idea what, this map has to do with Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. So, the good thing is it opened up a whole new opportunity to educate somebody. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it's about. I mean, you're impacting people's lives by your decision on that board. So I think his viewpoints have changed, and actually, got a friend out of it. So.
Oh, sure. It's definitely, for someone who is not familiar with Section 5, it can be a little overwhelming
first. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's like in a case like this, where it's clearly drawn out.
Yeah.
We're looking at a map now of the actual original gerrymander. So you've decided, I guess you filed your paperwork in July to run for legislature?
Yes, I've decided to run for the legislature. We still make first, after finishing up my chairmanship for the Democratic Party, try to figure out, what I was going to do next, looking at different opportunities, and I got a lot of encouragement to seek the seat down in the 33rd. It's one of the areas that have changed in the county a lot. People expect the legislator to be out there and mm-hmm. to be involved and be visible, and so I've been trying to do that. And so, it's been a good process so far.
Sure. Tell me a little bit about your district.
The district is probably the most diverse in Cobb County. When I say the most diverse, not meaning one way or the other, it's the most diverse as far as registered voters is 45% African American, 45% white, and 10% other. So it's the most racially balanced district, I guess, in the county. We've lived there pretty much that same general area since I moved to Georgia. People have been very receptive. I would be the first African American male legislator in Cobb County. So that comes up every once in a while, but not very often. So.
Mm-hmm. You were the Democratic Party leader.
Yes.
How was that? Tell me about your role with the group.
I enjoyed it. I started, like I said, with the Young Democrats of Cobb County. Ended up doing the Young Democrats of Georgia as treasurer. I get treasurer a lot because being a CPA. But
you got typecast.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Every time I go somewhere, it's church, elder, finance committee. But I moved from the Young Democrats to the Cobb County Democratic Committee. I was the treasurer. Then I ended up being the first vice chair and then chairman this last term.
Mm-hmm.
It was exciting. We first time in years that we had a presidential office. Got to drive the campaign person around to find two offices in Cobb County. So it was an exciting time.
With the last, were you, and how closely involved were you with the last presidential election?
That was, very closely.
Yeah.
As a county party, our job is to elect local people, but what we did, we had a great job of balancing with Jacob Klein, who was with the Obama campaign, balancing their resources and the two offices they had with our local experience and expertise, and it was a great combination. I was in there every day.
Mm-hmm.
We could provide some things and give an insight into where to go and all that thing. So we just had a reunion about a month ago, a year reunion of a lot of the Obama campaign, and so I kind of lucked out as far as timing, but worked out really well. Yeah.
Where were you the night of the election, do you remember?
We ended up, that was another one of the joint efforts, we ended up sponsoring the Democratic Party, we ended up sponsoring the victory celebration that night, so I was down at Zuka's Pizza, and I just remember that, we had the room, and my family lives in Virginia, and And so we were watching it, and then, you know, they were getting closer, and I think Virginia is the one that, you know, was right there and pushed it over, and I remember being on the phone with my sister, and, you know, this little corner room, everybody celebrating in the room, and, you know, there's a little tear popping up a little bit, but, you know, it was an emotional time, I mean, to be involved in that, to see it, and, you know, to be with all the people that had worked so hard. I mean, a lot of these people were new to politics, mm-hmm. but they had a lot of energy, and so, you know, that's, if anything came out of it, just getting people more involved mm-hmm. in the process.
Sure. I know you're very active also in your church. Tell me your role there.
We now attend Macklin Presbyterian Church. We are, I guess, active members. Prior to that, we attended another Presbyterian church, Calvary Presbyterian in Marietta, where we are both elders. We both served as elders, and I think I was on the finance committee in there as well. But we ended up, when we had our children, moving to a slightly larger church, and then more activities for children. Mm-hmm. So we attend regularly. We didn't grow up Presbyterian. Mm-hmm. We basically, before we got married, started looking at different churches and kind of found a home in the Presbyterian church, and we enjoy it. So, mm-hmm. Kids are going to be in the Christmas, I guess, play or whatever, and one's a shepherd and one's an angel or something. So, yeah, so it's nice. I think it's important for the kids to grow up in that, you know, area. You know,
sure, area, sure. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your family.
My wife, Penny, is from Illinois, originally Springfield. She grew up on a farm, and her family farmed. I guess they were tenant farmers, you know, and they bean, wheat, and corn. So, she grew up in there, and then about when she was 10, she moved to the big city of Springfield from Williamsville, and then they had a laundromat. So she grew up. Her family was very active in politics, on the wrong side, but none. a lot of them were very active on the Republican side in southern Illinois. So she grew up around politics. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, and she grew up around going to fairs. They had a booth at the fair all the time. So she enjoys getting out a lot. Mm-hmm. So the good thing about running is that we get a chance to go out to different places and meet different people, and she loves that. You know, which is very helpful to me. Because, you know, you want your family with you because you get to spend time together.
Sure.
And if it's something that they enjoy, it's kind of nice. And my kids are 6 and 7, David Jr. and Olivia. David Jr. is the oldest. And they have been licking envelopes probably for 5 years now. I remember the last election cycle, I think we were leaving a breakfast, and I'll take them with me sometimes. And they're like, I want to go to knock on doors. I'm like, okay, let's go knock on doors. So they like to knock, and, you know, it doesn't last that long, but they like to do it.
Sure.
So they've been working, yeah, probably, I would say, 3 and 4 is when they started. Licking envelopes, doing stamps, you know.
Sure. How did you meet your wife?
I met her at work. We both worked at World Travel. I was a divisional controller, and she had worked on the IBM project. Mm-hmm. And so we just met and kind of started dating. And
great.
And, and I'm getting married years later.
I noticed also in your bio that you're part of the Dad's Club, and you're also active in the PTA. Tell me about, not your role as a father, obviously, but what it means to be a father to you.
It means a lot. You know, I enjoy spending time with the kids, and we do a lot of different things together. I mean, we, you know, they play sports. Mm-hmm. The Dad's Club is something that this guy Ed Richardson started. He was, you know, PTAs typically are not a lot of men, and he was, I think, one of the vice presidents, and he didn't like being the only guy, so he went to this conference and he talked about ways to get dads involved. So he started this boys' club where the dads will come in. I mean, this Dad's Club where the dads will come in once a month, or, you know, whenever Ed tells us to, which is pretty much once a month, and say, you know, these are the opportunities we have. You know, it could be reading. I think on the 17th of this month, we'll be reading to the students, you know, and then, you know, passing out ribbons before school. We built an outdoor classroom. So, you know, the Fall Festival, we were responsible for, you know, working the booths and all of that. So it's a great opportunity. It makes it easy for the dads to get in school because they come in 7:30, they get some coffee, donuts, then they go on the morning news because the news, I guess, with kids nowadays, everything's broadcast on television. So they have a little television studio, and the dads get to come in there and say, good morning, Dave, good morning, Olivia, and wave at them, and then we go and do something for an hour. Mm-hmm. And so it's, like I said, it's a great opportunity to get us into school, get us out, and then you get familiar with it. And then now, dads will walk through the school, and it's funny, they're like, you're so-and-so's dad. So it's really cool because even if their dad can't make it, or maybe their dad's not involved, they like seeing male figures in the school, especially when there's only two male teachers. Mm-hmm. They appreciate that, and so, you know, it not only touches you, but it touches your children, and you see how it brights them up. So I try to get in the schools and read as much as possible. My wife is there a lot more than me. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, she's able to do that. And I think a child the other day saw her with a visitor badge. And was like, "Why do you have a visitor badge on? You don't. You work here." And she's like, "No, I really don't." But she's there every day, you know, doing things. So you know, between the ballet, the gymnastics, the karate, the soccer, you know, you got to enjoy it because they were already 6 or 7. It seems like yesterday.
Sure. What is education going to be one of the platforms that you make strong in your campaign?
It is, and fortunately, you know, a lot of times you get involved and you don't. Because you're so focused on your own child. And so I try to use my political involvement and my community service involvement, and also in when we're sitting in a meeting and parents are saying, well, what about this, what about that? And you can talk about how other schools are doing, because I always will look at other schools that are doing things to see if that's something that we want to do. Mm-hmm. So if you get outside your box, you get to see different things, and you get to see what's good about what you're doing, what others are getting that you're not getting that you might need to talk about. Mm-hmm. Because I think there still are some inequities in a lot of ways, and so I think a lot of that is education, too. If you tell people about it, then they'll know. I mean, the education, yeah. I mean, mine is going to be, my focus is more on the enabling parents, like, you know, the Ed Richardson of the world who want to start these dad clubs, to be able to do what they want to do in the schools and to give them that flexibility and freedom to do it without, you know, getting in their way. Because sometimes, you know, they're down at the Capitol and maybe their children have graduated, or maybe they're too busy doing something else, or maybe they've never had children, so they don't talk to the teachers or talk to the parents that are in the schools, and so they don't see the impact of, you know, something as simple as, well, you have to take a child, and you know, and as long as they get transportation, but nobody has defined what transportation is. So a parent can stick them on a bus that drops off a mile away, and that child is left with walking to that school, and there's nothing that school can do about it, even though they care about this child, because transportation has never been defined. So things simple as that, if you got out and talked to people, that you might hear, especially if they knew that, you know, you wouldn't say, well, I heard it from so-and-so, and, you know, get them in trouble.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. What do you foresee as maybe some of the challenges of the campaign?
Challenges of the campaign, running against an incumbent that's been there 12 years. Mm-hmm. You know, Cobb County is still, you know, you have a lot of people that, I mean, they grew up together. A lot of the legislators grew up together, and so they had those friendships. And you know, even within the party, someone that's been involved in the party as long as I have, you know, going on, I guess, two decades, you still are running against incumbent, and, you know, they're trying to protect incumbents, you know, and so their job is to make sure that the incumbent, you know, is protected sometimes, even though it may not be the best for the district. So, you know, and the incumbent will have a lot more money than I will, but I'll have a lot more volunteers, and we'll raise enough money to be, you know, to run a good race.
Do you foresee race being an issue?
It will, you know, I was asked, I talked about it a little while ago, but I was asked early on, and somebody said, well, actually one of the, said, you don't have to get a white vote based on the demographics of the primary, because it's probably going to be about 65% African American in the primary. And my only response was, well, there were two responses. One, I mean, hopefully people won't look at race when they're running, because I think everybody wants somebody that's going to be there to answer their phone and to talk to them. And I said, two, I get at least one white vote, I think, because my wife is white. So, I mean, so I think I'm going to be okay in those regards, just because, you know, it's about what's best for the district.
Sure.
Who's going to be there to answer your phone calls? Who's going to fight for the commission map? Who's going to fight for Milford Elementary when it's, you know, when they're trying to run a road through it? I mean, those type of issues I think people care about versus just, you know, race. You have to have substance.
Absolutely. In your campaign, will you use the case that you won, the gerrymandering case, as...
I think it's important. We haven't yet. We haven't even talked about it, because I'm trying to think if I even have it mentioned on the website yet. We may mention it briefly. I don't know. But I do have it on my cards. But we'll talk about it, just because I think it's part of the education process. What we're trying to do is not only run my race, but, you know, balance my activist kind of campaign side is education is always important. You know, to see where we've come, where we've been, and why it's important to have somebody fighting down there. Because you want a legislator that's going to be fighting for this versus having to have citizens. I mean, it was not an easy task to have, you know, people from the community trying to organize this. It's a lot easier if you have someone actually sitting at the table and taking part in that process.
Sure. One of the things that I'm also looking at with the Grogan versus Hunter case is the decision was made in June of 75, and next year, the next election of 76, Mr. Grogan did use the redistricting as a platform that he ran on, and he was actually able to get 75% of the African American vote the actual 75% of the population to actually go out and vote. Mm. So he did drive a lot of people to go out using that platform. That's what I was
saying.
Do you guys have any questions that you wanted to ask?
I do. How is it hard? Because
I'm sorry,
I mean, you're kind of introducing yourself as well as running, right? You haven't run before.
Actually, in 2004, well, being chairman of the party, you know, people at least have some name ID because I was kind of in the background, but I still, you know, the communications would go out or we had different events, so they would hear about it. You know, I try to make sure that people knew about the different candidates, so they got to hear about it somewhat. In 2004, I ended up running after the commission map. Did not win the primary, ended up losing to Annette Kesting, and then, you know, I was still first vice treasurer at the time, so then I just kind of stayed with the party and kind of working on candidates. But as far as introducing myself, it's been pretty receptive because either people will say they've kind of heard the name, mm-hmm. or people will say they've met me and know me because they saw me in the Obama office every day, or they see me working on behalf of other candidates. But even if they say, well, you know what, I've never heard from you, but I've never heard from the other guy. You know, he's been there 12 years, you just got out, so that's a good start, you know. So, you know, at worst case scenario, I guess I have to explain, you know, kind of introduce myself, but then my opponent has to explain where he's been 12 years, so that's the big difference.
What are some of the issues that the incumbent had that you think you can take advantage of?
The biggest issue is that people don't know him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to get a return phone call sometimes. That's just people would say, and I can believe that because I remember running against an incumbent. It's a process you got to think about. So I got a lot of encouragement to do it, mm-hmm. but you know, I called him in November, December, January, April, you know, and so you know I can believe it, you know, that's a little difficult, and like I said, when issues come up, people want someone that's going to take an active role, and even if it's not your responsibility, you know, that may not be in the realm that you're in. You need to give people kind of guidance because you are kind of the contact person for the community. So if something comes up and it's really a commission issue, you can say, well, that's a commission issue, and you know, let me call so and so and tell them you're calling. I'll give you a perfect example of that. We had a little campaign event over at the Ron Anderson Community Center, and somebody asked some questions about, well, would this be handled by the legislature? And I was like, no, that's really a local issue. But you don't stop there. It's, you know, this is your county commissioner. Give him a call. You know, let me know, you know, here, and you'll check. So, you know, when I see him, I'm like, Marcus, did you get a chance to talk to him? You know, that kind of thing. So you follow up because it's not a lot of work, but it saves that person a ton of time, mm-hmm. and it helps that person. Because you want your elected officials to work well together, you know. So I'm glad that you know some of the, you know, school board members you know, support me. We have good relationships. So I feel if I come into office that I'll have good relationships all around. So, mm-hmm. You know, because some people can't publicly say, well, we support you, but they'll say, well, when you get in, well, I'm sure we can work together. So I think July 21st, you know, and we all coalesce, and I just run a campaign that's focusing on, I guess, what I hope to do for the community.
Mm-hmm. Has anyone come out publicly yet in support?
I haven't asked a lot of people. People have shown up. I get a lot of advice, you know, and people that have been very helpful all along. And when I say advice, I mean helpful, you know, what do you think, and this is what you need to do kind of advice. But I wouldn't want to put them in that situation because, like I said, going down to the Capitol, running against an incumbent is always tough unless they're getting behind the train. So the train's got to start moving first. You know, the different organizations have been supportive, saying, you know, we think you got a good shot of winning. We think you can win, but we got to kind of stay back because, you know, we got to balance unless we see the tide turning, you know. Mm-hmm. And Allison Bartlett on the school board, we work closely together. I mean, she comes to all my campaign events. She's probably the only one right now that's publicly, you know, saying, you know, we want you in there.
Sure. But, have any groups come out in support yet?
Not as far as groups. What we're trying to do right now is just talk to everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk to individuals. Really, you know, I am glad that any Obama staffer that was in Cobb County is supporting me.
Okay.
There were three paid staffers, as well as all the campaign work. You know, campaign mm-hmm. workers pretty much are on board. So those are the people that actually got to see me working, mm-hmm. and had never met Don. I mean,
sure.
you have a. That's the one thing. You have an office, a presidential office in your district. And you almost lose, you win by 100-something votes, and you don't show back up after your primary mm-hmm. to help out the other Democrats. So, you know, especially at the top of the ticket. So I think people kind of remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that's the benefit. So, you know, after the first of the year, what usually happens with groups is they'll look at how much money you raised, and they'll look and see, and then they'll say, well, if you're doing all right, then we'll, you know, kind of throw it in. I mean, money comes to those, I guess, that don't need it as much.
Sure.
So, yeah.
The NAACP, obviously, they can't endorse a politician either way for any side of race, being a nonprofit. Have you worked with the NAACP before? Have you had what type of interactions, if any?
From a political standpoint, because I've been so involved in politics, it's more of an informational participation, or, you know, things that they need to be involved in, because you do have to keep those boundaries. I mean, I'm a lifetime member of the NAACP. Mm-hmm. When the case came up, I, you know, brought Deanne up to speed, Ms. Mm-hmm. Bonner. So I stopped by frequently just to see how things are going and kind of let her know what's going on. But she has a role of, and her role is, you know, different than my role. We may have the same goals sometimes, but you have to make sure those are separate, because she's got to work with everybody, and you don't want any tagging of political, you know, type thing. But, you know, we invite her to every event that we have. But yeah, you know, I think the NAACP definitely serves a significant role in the community. This, when they had their celebration, we went to a baseball game. I was on the bus with everybody else. So I do participate, mm-hmm. you know, in the activities of the NAACP, but that is separate. Just like, you know, when I go to my church and I'm an elder, you know, when I was an elder at my new church, I don't, you know, I'm not David the Democrat or David the candidate, or, you know, so you have to separate those different roles. But mm-hmm. yeah.
Sure. Was that the Rome Braves game that you went? You
no, we actually went to the Gwinnett.
Oh,
yeah,
Gwinnett. Okay.
Gwinnett Stadium. Yeah, yep, that was okay. A nice trip over there.
Sure. What other local politicians are kind of active in what you're doing?
In what I'm doing, visibly, I would say none, really, visibly. Like mm-hmm. I said, but I do have frequent conversations mm-hmm. that. You know, like I said, people have been very supportive. And the other thing they're good about is if rumors start up, you know, they've been good at letting me know the rumors and squashing the rumors.
Yeah.
You know, because in a campaign like this, part of the time is going to be spent, well, does he have a hidden agenda? You know, is he part of a movement by one of the other legislators to take over? You know, because, mm-hmm. That was one of the rumors that I was part of a conspiracy by Alicia Morgan to take over the Cobb delegation, and I was running as a candidate, which is kind of funny because I remember when she came on board, I'd already been involved in party politics for 10 years, mm-hmm. You know, and she's a representative, and she wouldn't do that. So, but, you know, those type of rumors, mm-hmm. you stop those, and then, you know, so they've been good about letting me know what's going on. If something's happening, you know, you might want to watch out for this.
Yeah,
so you know when things are coming up. So that's as much as I could ask. You know, everybody's going to run their own race.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you have to focus on your own race, but at the same time, you know, you it's good to have that support.
Sure. And it's still early, too.
Yeah, it's still early, too. It's still early, yeah. I mean, you know, I feel, you know, with our context, you know, it's about the people in the community. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think they're the ones that are going to decide it. You know, you'll get mailers, and it's interesting the type of mailers that come out, but you'll get mailers, and that'll speak for one side, but we'll be doing mailers, door-to-door, everything, so.
Sure. When you win the election next year,
yep.
What are going to be some of the first things that you do when you get in office?
Even prior to taking office and winning, part of the campaign, we'll start our, like, town hall type meetings next year where we'll get out and meet with people, whether people show up, you know, or whether they don't, we'll have them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, over time they will start to build. But you have to have that ability for people. How can people get involved if they don't know who to get involved with?
Mm-hmm.
So what we'll do is we'll start having these meetings where people can come in, voice their opinions, you know, say what's on their mind, and then, you know, try to help people that way. Because part of it is, you know, a lot of people can get help, but they don't even know where to go.
Right.
The other thing that, you know, time will have to be spent, you know, as long as I've been in politics, there'll still be certain things about the legislature that I'll have to learn, you know, and understand. You know, but votes you can count on for me. You know, never, you know, I'll be friendly on the environment. You know, education issues, like I said, will be very important. Looking at the funding, trying to get a good understanding, you know, being one of the few CPAs down there, you know, that would be one of the first things, is trying to get a good understanding of what actually is in the budget. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is I came onto the F&T committee this year, the Facility Technologies Committee for the school board, and one of the things we've always had an argument over is insourcing versus outsourcing. And the thought is, well, outsourcing is always cheaper. Well, coming from the business world, that is very rarely the case. If you know, especially when it's, because all they do is take the same people and then add a markup on it. And so we did an analysis, some people on the committee, and we were able to come back and say, look, it's a couple of million dollars cheaper mm-hmm. to do it in-house. And we ended up The people didn't think we would, but we were able to get a vote. The school board said come back with a recommendation. They didn't think we would, but we did, and said bring it in-house. And so we ended up bringing it in-house. They've hired somebody, and we've saved, you know, they're even projecting, you know, $3-5 million savings a year over the life of the project. So those type of things that, you know, simple things that if you put it on paper, it's like, okay, this is what we found out. What do you see wrong with it?
Sure.
Well, we still think it's wrong. Well, no. What do you see wrong with it? And if you have enough people, and the committee, that there are only 3 Democratic school board members out of the 7. And so on this committee, it's comprised of people appointed by the school board plus the superintendent. So you basically had a committee of 16 people where there were very few Democrats. So, you know, I was the one that made the motion, but I was working with a group of other people that didn't matter if they were Democrat or Republican. We were able to get it passed.
Sure.
One of the school board members said, well, he's working for the Democratic Party. I'm like, oh, come on. So you get past those, but, you know, I like it because I think it just says, one, you got to be able to work with different people.
Yeah.
Two, you got to present the facts. And three, you know, people will do what's right, I think, if you treat them correctly. So.
Absolutely. And he had the numbers back.
Yeah, we had the numbers. And that's the key thing. I want to look at those numbers and see if, you know, we talk about education cuts. They talk about increased in funding, and you know, we're looking at teacher furloughs. You know, we got the Go Fish program. Mm-hmm. You know, you got all these different, you know, things going, money going everywhere. That, you know, I think it's good to, you know, dig in there and see what's going on.
Sure. It's. I mean, you can definitely see where you're using your experience as an accountant with what you're going to do with politics. That's great. The school. Let me ask you a little bit more about the school system. Can you just tell me a little bit more about some of the aspects of the school system that you think need changing, are in bad shape? What do you think?
Well, one of the first things that I would like to do, going back to what I would like to do, is as far as the schools, I would like to see those nonpartisan races. Mm-hmm. I look at the school board, and when we look at some of the challenges they face, it has nothing to do with party. It has more to do with, you know, getting on the board and then forgetting why you're there in the first place and then doing what's right. You see way too many decisions where money's not even considered. I mean, you're facing a budget year where they're looking at new cuts in January, and they change the school calendar, and the question was asked, well, what impact does it have financially? They have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
How can you make a significant decision to start beginning of August when other school systems are pushing it back to avoid the higher air conditioning without even looking at the cost? And then it makes it difficult to go to the legislature and say, we need more money, when they look at you and say, well, why are you making decisions without looking at cost? So it's a great school system. I really enjoy working, you know, whether it's the school foundation or the F&T committee with the school, but at the same time, you question a lot of their, you know, a lot of things they do, which I think is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it needs to be questioned. I think if a school board member comes on and says, I promise to do this, for example, the calendar, back to that, that's a basic question. I mean, it's not like something that you have to do a lot of like, some things you'll learn more about when you get on the board, but a calendar, I think, you know, that's one of the first questions they usually ask in a lot of these school board races. And for two of them to change their mind quickly after getting in office makes you just question that. And, you know, like I said, I mean, some districts, qualifications don't matter. It's more about party. I mean, some are Democratic districts, some are Republican districts, but, you know, and that's who will probably get in out of the primary. But if you make it nonpartisan, you make people start focusing on the issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I think county commission and school board need to be nonpartisan like they are in most places.
Sure. You just brought up the issue of predictability with wards and districts.
Yep.
What are the pros and cons of that?
The predictability?
Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, it is what it is, unfortunately. You can pretty much, yeah, I mean, there's a leeway. You have a small portion that you can, I guess, influence as far as going one versus the other when you have a partisan race. But, you know, you can basically look at a district and determine kind of how it's going to go. It doesn't matter if, you know, this person was, you know, somebody's brother or some. They thought the person was the greatest. It's just hard for them to pull a ballot of the opposite party sometimes. It, on a local level, it makes it easier a little bit. But here, it's pretty much split in a lot of ways. You know, and it takes a lot to swing. I think Beth Faroki, when she ran against John Crooks, she was able to pull a lot. I mean, I think she ended up beating the top of the ticket by, say, 10 percentage points. The problem is the top of the ticket lost by 20 in that district. So,
sure.
You know, you end up getting, you know, 45%. But that was just going door-to-door to everybody. And some people just couldn't pull the trigger and vote for, you know, for various reasons. But you know, it's predictable in some ways, but then in other ways, you know, people will change and mm-hmm. you can influence a little bit through just talking to them and saying, you know, this is what I present, this is what the person presents, and hopefully winning them over. Oh, it takes sure. a lot of work, though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you have any other questions? Okay.
Do you think your background in accounting has hindered you at all, since you don't really, you didn't have that background in law, or?
I don't think so. You know, I think there's enough lawyers. Now, if you talk to a lawyer, they say there's not enough lawyers down there. But, you know, because we do take a business law class. So, you know, I deal a lot with SEC reporting, security and exchange reporting, so I have to file 10-Ks and 10-Qs, and everything we do gets sent to the lawyer, but you have to make it so that it's can pass the legal muster, because they're for publicly traded company, these documents. So it gives you that ability to do some research, similar to what a lawyer does. It gives you that ability to communicate it, similar to what a lawyer does. And a lot of times I have to go to my clients and talk about different issues that are, you know, could be complicated. So I think that kind of is similar. I think the voting rights case is a perfect example of where I was able to dig into, you know, a law and look at it and determine what the benefits were, and you know, of that law and how it applied to our case, and then to work with the attorney. So so I don't think it necessarily would hinder me.
Okay.
But it's, you know, like I said, I think people say there's enough lawyers, maybe.
That's good.
Obviously, you stress education. What do you think were some of the influences in that? Were your parents really, did they stress education growing up, or?
Yeah, they did. Both of my parents, you know, provided me an opportunity to do a lot of reading. I love reading. I read all the time. I try to do, you know, 2 books a month of different topics. I mean, I think I'm reading Vicksburg 18-something now, Civil War cases. Being in the South, I've mm-hmm. started learning more about the Civil War, but my dad spent a lot of time in the schools, you know.
Okay.
He spent a lot of time coming by and, you know, going to the teachers, talking to the teachers, you know, attending all the conferences. We weren't necessarily PTA families.
Mm-hmm.
They were just very active in
okay.
participating in the process, which, like I said, starting the Boys Club, I think, you know, helped as well, you know, because he got to spend time in the schools and
right.
doing different things.
So he was very involved with your education involved. And
oh,
all
yeah.
that?
Oh, yeah. They didn't tell me where to go to college. I think my brother influenced me a lot on that. He was very helpful, and you know, he would talk to the dean, you know, before I even got there, and see what kind of scholarships were available for me. So my brother was a large influence as well, you know. So
Eastman Kodak Scholar. Tell
yeah.
me a little bit about that.
I went to college on an ROTC scholarship, and I had 1 year. I remember my dad making me sign the paperwork, and I was like, well, you know, I'll try, you know, and so. Basically, the dean said, if you get a certain GPA, we'll try to help you find a scholarship. And so I interviewed with Eastman Kodak, and part of the scholarship was I had to go there 1 year after my sophomore year in college, and they basically provided tuition, you know, for me to continue to school. So I guess it's a program that they have all across the country, go up there for the summer, work in one of the plants or work in the corporate office, and get to meet interns from all over the country. And so it was a good experience, really good experience. After my junior year, didn't have to go back, the dean said, you might want to go back. You know, I was thinking about public accounting. He said, public accounting will be there when you get done, you know. You go back, you know, you're paying for your school, that kind of thing. And so I went back and got some different experience in another area.
Mm-hmm.
So it gave me the opportunity to work in the corporate office as well as the plant, you know, see part
sure.
of Kodak, see one of our big manufacturing, you know, sites at the time.
Where were they?
Rochester, New York.
Okay.
Yep. So I headed up to Rochester, and I remember going up there at the end of May, and I think at the beginning of May, they had a snowstorm. So fortunately, I never had to worry about snowstorms when I was up there, but I knew I wouldn't be going back to work in snowstorms. Storms, you know, grew up in New Jersey, it was nothing compared to Rochester. But,
12 feet of lake
yeah.
effect snow.
But yeah, so that was good, you know. And also, I remember at the time that, you know, it was one of the first interviews I had done, you know, that kind of setting. And the interviewee was very helpful. And that's where, you know, I guess you don't get somewhere by yourself. Mm-hmm. That, you know, they were like, well, next time you interview, you may want to do this, this, and this. I mean, the academics were there, the personality, mm-hmm. I think they thought it would be a good fit, all that, but there were certain things about interviewing. They said, you know, you might want to do this, this, and this, and this. So it was a great learning experience. And I try to remember that, too, when I'm talking to younger people as well, is to also say, you know, to be able to see through it, to be able to say, you know, these are the type of things that you might want to look at in the future. So, mm-hmm. I mean, and it's always easy, like I say, as you do things, to forget how people have helped you out along the way, but that still sticks in my mind.
Sure. And did that experience help you with the interview with Deloitte & Touche?
Oh, yeah. So it was definitely very helpful.
Great. Yeah. Mr. Wilkes, I think I've got all the questions. I think I've asked all the questions that I need for our research to be part of this program. But thanks for coming in this morning.
My pleasure.
And like I said, I'll get in touch with you, and we'll get a bound copy of this, and we'll get you the celebration come the spring.
Oh, sounds good.
Good luck with
thanks
the campaign.
Thank you
great.
So much.
Thanks a lot.
It's good meeting you.